WGBW 1590 AM Denmark, W250 CV Green Bay, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Andy Field. Another week, another atmospheric river flowing into California.
What moved into Northern California in the Carmel area? Pretty incredible. It almost looked like a hurricane on radar moving in, even with what looked like an eye in the middle of it. That moved in with 80 mile per hour winds, doing a lot of damage of trees going down and power lines as well.
ABC's Alex Stone. California Highway Patrol saying a tree fell on a car in San Mateo County, killing one person. The Pentagon putting a rush order on the Abrams tanks it promised Ukraine, opting to refurbish older models.
This is about getting this important combat capability into the hands of the Ukrainians sooner rather than later.
Pentagon spokesman Brigadier General Pat Ryder. Chinese President Xi Jinping wrapping a two-day visit to Moscow and summit with Russian President Vladimir Putin. Gerber voluntarily recalling some powdered infant formula made at a facility in Eau Claire, Wisconsin, over possible bacterial contamination. This is ABC News. Sales of pre-owned homes jumped 14.5% in February compared to January for the fastest pace in 6 months. But the National Association of Realtors says sales sank nearly 23% compared to a year ago. A popular tennis venue is going to the dogs.
Serena Williams said she'd be evolving away from the sport of tennis after the U.S. Open last year. Thousands of purebred dogs, however, are just beginning their journey.
For the best in show is the Beagle.
The 147th annual Westminster Kennel Club Dog Show will be held at the Billie Jean King National Tennis Center, where the U.S. Open is held in Queens on May 8th and 9th, with the agility and obedience competitions taking place the weekend before. From Pomeranians to poodles to Portuguese water dogs, there are more than 3,000 competitors this year. At 51, Golden Retrievers have the most entries. Sherry Preston, ABC News, New York.
Amid threats of a U.S. ban, TikTok rolling out updated rules and standards for content. Andy Field, ABC News.
The Civic Media Network of radio stations across Wisconsin. We are your hometown radio, refreshed.
For Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell. Here's what you need to know. A teenage boy is dead and five women are wounded after a mass shooting late last night in Milwaukee. The boy was 15. The women are in their late teens and early 20s. Police, last they said anything, were still putting together what happened and why. Janet Protasiewicz says she'd rule based on the law while at the same time being open about her personal views on issues like abortion.
My personal opinion is that should be the woman's right to make the reproductive health decision, period.
She debated Dan Kelly today in the only head-to-head debate in the Wisconsin Supreme Court general election. The whole debate tonight at 6 on many of these Civic Media radio stations. In sports, Badger men's basketball plays Oregon tonight in the NIT quarterfinals. I'm Terry Bell, and this is Civic Media News.
Dear hero, whoever you are, you save lives. I live with sickle cell and the pain and the issues that come along with sickle cell every day. I've had lots and lots of blood transfusions over my lifetime, probably in the hundreds. Blood helps me to be able to live.
My final tour was in Afghanistan in 2008. I was hit June 3rd. The next thing I remember, I woke up in Germany. The doctor came in and said, we're going to amputate your leg. I had to get a lot of blood transfusion to stay alive.
Because of you, I'm allowed to see my son grow up.
Because of you, I got a second chance at life.
Giving equals living. Give blood. Replenish the supply. Make an appointment to give today by visiting hhs.gov/giveblood. This message is brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.
Talking to your kids about the dangers of vaping can be hard. Getting them to listen to hot gossip is easy. So here's some drama you could share with your kid. Dude, did you hear about Cassie and Jake? No, but did you hear that vaping can cause irreversible lung damage and nicotine affects brain development? Nuh-uh. You don't need to gossip if you want to have an open conversation about vaping. So if you want to get tips on when and how to talk to your kids, visit talkaboutvaping.org. Brought to you by the American Lung Association and the Ad Council.
Moving Day, a walk for Parkinson's, is happening around the country. Together we can unite in the fight against Parkinson's disease in a safe but exciting and fun way. So let's get moving. Join the Parkinson's Foundation to learn more and register at movingdaywalk.org.
This is the story of a very special woman. Just a few knew about her superpowers. In a matter of seconds, she turned herself into a great mathematician. She masqueraded as a regular person at work, but as a superhero at home. Everyone knows her as Gabriella. I still call her Mom.
Your hero needs you now, and AARP is here to help. Find the care guides you need to help, complete with tips and resources, at aarp.org/caregiving. Brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
You were supposed to get a colon cancer screening, but stuff came up.
We did have to pick up the twins from practice.
But on the way, we hit a giant pothole.
If you are 45 and older, don't let stuff get in the way of your screening. Visit the Colorectal Cancer Alliance at ccalliance.org.
But then...
TheRickSmithShow.com and download the podcast and never miss a minute.
It's time for The Rick Smith Show. Now, here is the voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
And welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is The Rick Smith Show. Thanks so much for tuning in. Today, the big program, lots to get to, lots to talk about. I first want to start off today with, you know, that whole budget thing, you know, budgets being moral documents, budgets showing priorities. And I always find it interesting that the people who tell us how pious they are, you know, how godly, how religious, how, you know, how Christian they are, tend to pursue budgets that cause more pain and suffering, especially for the downtrodden and the poor. So am I surprised again? And this is again, that the House Freedom Caucus and the Republicans are coming out with what is a really very, very painful budget proposal. And look, working people, you ain't gonna like it because it's you they're coming after. And this is why I keep saying Republicans hate working people. Look at what they do. Not what they say, not the rhetoric, not the messaging machine that's out there promoting all their good, whatever it is. It's actually what they do. Now, remember, last year, the Republican study committee plan, and we talked about this last year, would have cut Social Security by 4% if we'd allowed them, would have cut Medicare by 24%, would have cut Medicaid, CHIP, the dreaded Obamacare, would have cut that by 49%. You know, all other mandatory spending, be it, you know, food assistance, farm subsidies, you know, military, you know, pensions, you know, anti-poverty programs, all of that stuff, they would have slashed that by 60%. And all other spending, you know, veteran spending, veteran health, transportation, education, law enforcement, all of this stuff, they would have cut by 49%. The only thing that got a bump in their budget was a 1% gain for, you know what, the military. Because they have to have the messaging. No, we support the military. See, we gave them a little bit. Everybody else took a haircut. Now, this was last year. I understood. No budgets are going to get through and ever again in my lifetime because of how divided we are. But it's interesting that the Republicans put out their priorities. And as I say all the time, budgets are about priorities. It is a moral document. What are we doing? We're going to take money, literally take food out of the mouths of children to give more tax cuts, to enrich the very wealthy. In this twisted mindset that somehow by doing this, by having, you know, all of this wealth accumulating at the top, that somehow it's going to roll downhill. It'll trickle. Where have we heard this? It'll trickle down. You may have heard this before. There's this theory. Maybe you've heard of it. Trickle-down economics. We give a handful of people everything they could possibly want, all of it, and then some. And eventually their pockets get full. Again, eventually their plate overfills, however you want. The cup runneth over, and it then trickles down, and we get to fight over the scraps. Problem is, the insatiable appetite for more, the insatiable greed knows no bounds. And this is just, duh. You know, I was a kid at the time when I remember, you know, George H.W. Bush saying, it's voodoo economics. Because it is. This idea that your benevolence is going to trickle down. Get out of here. And we're dumb for thinking that. Well, maybe it's true. Maybe this time in human history, you know, one guy isn't going to steal all the cookies. Now is different because they learned. Again, back to priorities in legislation, back to priorities in budgeting. Republicans showed their hand. Rick Scott, his plan, sunset all programs, everything, all of it. And then we can reauthorize what we think you should have, which means Social Security and Medicare go and never get back. Because remember, the Republican Party was always against those things. Wanted no social safety net whatsoever. Wanted desperate, exploitable workers. Cheap labor. You, me, us. So do you think in a Rick Scott world, do you think Social Security, do you think that gets reauthorized? Of course not. Now, I look at the Freedom Caucus plan that just came out. We're gonna get rid of Biden's plan to cap insulin at $35. Sorry, diabetics. They're going to cut again. Now, remember, this is the inflation reduction plan. This is part of Make America Strong and Great. They're going to cut funding for the Border Patrol. Now, remember, all they do is scream about, we need more border wall, head blowing up. Their budget proposal would actually cut 2,000 Customs and Border Patrol agents. But you know what? Never mind. Listen to what they say. Listen to the nonsense jargon. This, again, their budget would, you know, strengthen drug companies' control over us. So seniors, dig deep, because they're coming for you. Massive cuts to the VA. Now, remember, they love the soldiers. They love the troops, unless they get sick and need something. And again, this is another one of those moments where not surprising, because this is who they are. And I normally come back to, there's nothing to see here because this is who they've always been. But they keep telling us time and time and time again by their actions, not by their words, because if you listen to their words, man, utopia. Now I look at Joe Biden's budget. Biden came out with a budget plan, going to raise taxes on rich people. I've been saying we need to do that for a very long time. I'm going to end tax breaks to outsource jobs and profits. We're going to deal with the tax code. We're going to deal with this in a way that, you remember when Mitt Romney was running for president and said, I've never seen a company get a tax break to move overseas, only to find out that his Bain Capital actually got it. Never mind what they say. Now I look at Biden's budget and it's doing a lot of the things that I've been advocating, closing loopholes. For these big corporations. How is it that these wildly profitable corporations pay zero in taxes? How is that possible? The fact that he came out with a billionaire's minimum income tax, saying, look, we hear from our Republican friends all the time, you need skin in the game. How is it that billionaires don't pay any taxes? Because of how they hide money, how they access income. Only we don't tax it the way they get it. Going to, you know, deal with a little bit on stock buybacks, which I think should be much more aggressive. Going to raise the top rate for the highest income, that top income bracket. Not nearly back to the good socialist president, David Eisenhower, when it was 92%, but going to bump that up a little bit. And then we're going to spend money investing in the future, invest in children, expand the child tax credit so we don't have as many hungry kids at night. Get more health care for people through the ACA. Look, I would love to see something bigger and better and bolder and more expansive, but it's what we've got for today. Also talking about, hey, how about, here's an idea. Maybe we expand the school year or the schooling from K through 12 to K through 14 so that people can get a community college degree, associate's degree, and have another skill. Because guess what? We're moving into a tech future. He's talking about strengthening Medicare, strengthening Social Security, expanding Medicaid, doing all kinds of things that are going to make your life, my life, working people's lives better. But again, that's what we're told? No, no, don't do that. That's socialism. And, you know, I lay all this stuff out for a reason, because neither of these budgets are going to pass. Neither of them, on either side, on Biden's side or on the Republican side. There they are. They're telling you what they believe. They're telling you what their moral and what their personal views are. One is, screw you, we want more for the rich. And one saying, hey, how can we be a partner to expand wealth to the working class of this country? We are at a crossroads, whether you like it or not. This is a crossroads moment. Biden, I got to give him credit. This could be a transformational presidency if we do better going forward. He is moving us in a direction to reshore manufacturing, to change a tax code to tax the very wealthy and use that to invest in the future of our children, of our seniors, of our country. But again, you've got those who don't want that throwing a fit. The wealth class. And they're happy with Washington divided. They're happy with the fact that we're not going to get a budget passed that's going to do any of the things that the president wants to do. They're thrilled with this. Because they continue to, well, they continue to rake in the profits. But we're at a crossroads moment, and this is important. You go back to Reagan. Reagan was a massive, massive crossroads moment. And I've said this before. You know, had Carter won re-election, we'd be much further down the road towards green energy. The solar panels would not have been ripped off immediately. The Patco workers wouldn't have been fired. So union density would be stronger. We would have higher wages in the working class. We would have been moving still in the neoliberal direction. Don't get me wrong. There was some things still happening that Reagan just accelerated, but it would have been at a much slower pace. And working people wouldn't have taken it on the chin as bad as they did. And you go, you know, the Reagan era was horribly transformational. The W years, again, another one of those moments where took over an economy that was thriving. We were on the verge. Think about this. 2000, we were talking about what life would be debt-free as a country. No debt. We were talking about, Greenspan was saying, you know, we have no idea what this world's going to look like with us having no debt. And now we're, what, $34 trillion in the hole? Thanks, W. Because, again, we gave massive tax breaks to corporate America and the very wealthy. And, oh, by the way, we got lied into what happened over in Iraq. And then there's the Trump years. Again, more tax handouts to the very wealthy, more deregulation and incivility on steroids. Major transformational change. And I can hear people go, but Rick, why aren't you going after Carter or Clinton or Obama? Because they were less bad than what we were seeing. I mean, I look at Carter. Carter was a very moderate Democrat. He deregulated the trucking and the airline industries and would have probably done some more of that. Not as quickly, not as aggressively, but still we were moving in that direction. I look at Clinton, and Clinton was marginally better than HW. Said, hey, we're going to raise taxes on rich people. What got my vote, he said he was going to fight for a strike replacement bill. That didn't happen. For me, these are those moments. And Obama, his years didn't bring the kind of transformational change that I wanted. So for me, that's where this is at. So this is where my mind goes. The sad reality is it's us. We have to be the ones who stand up and fight back against this. But I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Going to take a quick break right back after this. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
The phone lines are open. Give Rick a call at 1-866-416-RICK. That's 1-866-416-7425.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
I got to go back to this. You know, we are at this crossroads kind of moment, and elections have consequences. You know, go back to 80, the 2000, the 2016 consequences. And the working class, again, continued to take it on the chin. It's something to think about as we're moving forward. Let's quick go to the phones. Got Kurt from Akron, Ohio on line one. Kurt, how are we doing today?
Hey, good evening, Rick. How are you?
Good. What's on your mind?
Oh, I was going to say, we could even go as far back as 1968. Just think, had Nixon, well, let me just put it this way. Lyndon Johnson, after the three major candidates were declared the nominees, Nixon, Humphrey, and Wallace, Johnson had a conference call with all three major candidates, and you can hear it online, too, where he was talking about the bombing halt that he was trying to do with North and South Vietnam. And he was telling Humphrey and Nixon and Wallace what you can and can't say to the people, to the media, whatever. Well, if you remember your history, Nixon went right to the source in Paris and said, kind of like what Reagan said in 1980 or Reagan's people said in 1980 about, just hold off on that until after the election. I have a better plan to get the war to end.
Yeah.
So just think, had Nixon not been elected and Humphrey was elected instead, what a better world this would be for working people as well. I mean, Humphrey, go ahead.
No, I'm absolutely right there with you. You keep going. You're hitting it out of the park.
Okay, Humphrey was a champion of the working class, of the working people. Just to listen to, in fact, you know that I've done a lot of those historic audio recording collections. I actually did a Hubert Humphrey one. Boy, was he nothing more than pro-worker, pro-union. In fact, he defined what a patriot really is, and that's to use your inheritance, whether it's a good name, a fortune, or just being a United States citizen. You don't exploit that inheritance. You go out and you do something to make it better for people less fortunate than you. But just think, we would be 55 years ahead if we would have elected Hubert Humphrey over Richard Nixon in 1960. And he was pretty close to winning that election. I mean, if you think about it, Humphrey only lost by about, seven-tenths of a percent to Nixon that year. So... And then, of course, Jimmy Carter, you know, if we would have listened to him about the fossil fuels and the gasoline and the oil and started doing the solar panels on the White House, we'd be 45 years ahead of schedule now. And, of course, Al Gore would have been able to do something with it in 2000 if he were able to assume office. And just think, if Hillary were elected, or excuse me, if she were to assume office, she got the popular vote, folks. We wouldn't have the problem with this pandemic. We wouldn't have closed down the pandemic office. And it's just amazing what a world's paradise this could have been if people would have just paid attention to their history, if they would have just listened and not listened to, say, media just to get the clicks versus finding out the actual news. And you were talking about transitional presidency of Joe Biden. I was listening to FDR the other day, and my goodness, a lot of what FDR did during the Depression era, after 12 years of trickle-down economics, or as they called it, the horse and sparrow theory, you know, this is a lot of what Joe Biden's doing now. And people don't understand this stuff because, oh my gosh, that's 90 years ago. Who cares about 90 years ago? And I'm now hearing women even saying they would rather give up their freedom so that they can pay less than $2 a gallon for gas. So that's where we're at in this world.
It's all about the fear. The fear sells, my friend. Fear sells. But I appreciate the thoughts, and you do great work. I hope folks will check out your audio recordings, and I always appreciate when you send it to them.
Thank you, Rick.
Thank you. Good stuff, Kurt. Thanks so much. No, this is, again, we have these moments throughout history where you go, you know, it's the choices we make at the ballot boxes. And he makes an excellent point. I forgot all about Humphrey and a true working class hero. And you think about, you know, all of the presidents and you know, their position on kitchen table economics. You know, Carville was right. It's the economy, stupid. Let's go to our tweet of the day. Congressman Burgess Owens tweeted out, "We're holding hearings to examine Joe Biden's unlawful executive action to transfer hundreds of billions of dollars in student debt onto the American taxpayer." Now, if you don't know who Utah Representative Burgess Owens is, he is now the chair, he's the chair of a congressional subcommittee, the Higher Education and Workforce Development Subcommittee. They are holding a hearing this week. It's titled "Breaking the System: Examining the Implications of Biden's Student Loan Policies for Students and Taxpayers." He goes on in a press release to say that Biden's got no authority to do what he's doing, to cancel student loan debt unilaterally. He says debt cannot be canceled, only transferred from those who borrowed to those who did not, creating an off-ramp for responsibility, driving up college costs, disincentivizing real loan reform, and forcing hard-working American taxpayers to pay for someone else's loans is nothing more than a backdoor attempt at free college with abysmal implications for students, taxpayers, and our economy. Now, I'm not going to get into whether we should be having, you know, a discussion around should we have free college or whatnot, because that's not the point here. Not the point. The point is you've got Burgess Owens saying that people not paying their debt is bad. If you borrow money, someone else is going to have to pay for it. Now, again, what this second term Utah congressman, he's been, like I said, a very vocal opponent of the student forgiveness program, argued it was unconstitutional, said it was inflationary, going to cause inflation to go crazy out of hand. I was going to add, you know, billions to our debt, even signed on to an amicus brief before the Supreme Court. Why is this important? Why am I talking about Burgess in a way that hypes what he's saying? You know, because we can't create off ramps for responsibility. We can't let these debtors off the hook, says Burgess Owens. You know where this is going, right? You got to know where this is going. The federal records show Burgess Owens filed for bankruptcy 5 times. Let that sink in for a second. The guy who's saying that we can't help college students who were told that this was their only path to the middle class, the only way they were going to have a reasonable life is if they take on all this massive debt, saddle themselves with decades of debt to get this job that hopefully will be able to pay for a decent living and these massive loans so that we could give tax cuts to rich people and bail out banks. A guy who's filed bankruptcy and had his debts forgiven 5, not 1, not 2, not 3, like Trump, not 4, not 4, 5 times. And yet somehow he is opposed to this. Huh. It's quite remarkable how this seems to work. Now, and again, you know, I love the argument that it's inflationary. We're going to take on this debt. It's going to raise inflation. It's going to be bad. And yet everything that they keep proposing is how we make the working class suffer more, how we hold down wages, how we cause more unemployment, how we make unemployment much more desperate by cutting the number of weeks of unemployment, the money that comes out of unemployment. Doesn't it seem curious that whenever corporate America gets in trouble, whenever they borrow too much, whenever they make bad decisions, Silicon Valley Bank, that there doesn't seem to be the same kind of fire and brimstone. it doesn't seem to be the same kind of anger and vitriol. Or when it's, you know, Burgess Owens, 5 times filed bankruptcy. Here's the thing, Burgess. You can say no when you pay the people that you owe. How about that? Love to hear your thoughts. Email me, Rick at TheRickSmithShow.com. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 1947. That was the day President Harry S. Truman signed Executive Order 9835. It is commonly referred to as the Loyalty Order. It required the screening of millions of federal civil servants and applicants. 9835 is considered one of the key preconditions for the rise of the McCarthyite Red Scare. It established a loyalty review board, a master index of those investigated, and definitions determining alleged disloyalty. Disloyalty could mean sedition, espionage, or advocating revolution. It could also mean membership or sympathetic association with movements considered totalitarian, fascist, communist, or subversive. Soon, the Attorney General's list of subversive organizations was published. It amounted to a blacklist. In their book, The 50s, Douglas Miller and Marion Nowak comment, between the launching of his security program in March of 1947 and December of 1952, some 6.6 million persons were investigated. Not a single case of espionage was uncovered, though about 500 persons were dismissed in dubious cases of questionable loyalty. All of this was conducted with secret evidence, secret and often paid informants, and neither judge nor jury. Despite the failure to find subversion, the broad scope of the official Red Hunt gave popular credence to the notion that government was riddled with spies. President Dwight Eisenhower would revoke 9835 with his executive order 10450. But this order dismantled the loyalty boards by transferring power to federal agencies. It also expanded investigations to include those engaged in immoral or disgraceful behavior. This included what is considered sexual deviance and led to the witch hunting and discrimination against gays and lesbians in civil service.
What's wrong with us? Her nation's moral compass, I mean. I don't like being a downer, just focusing on wrongs, but some wrongs stand out as morally abominable, such as this one. It's about hundreds of thousands of our low-income elders who, toward the end of life, when frail and most vulnerable, find themselves cast into a part of the Medicaid system that has been deliberately structured by Congress to subject them to needless deprivations and daily indignities. These are our loved ones with serious health problems who need long-term care in nursing homes, and 2/3 of them rely on Medicaid to cover their costs. To get this benefit, they surrender all of their income, which goes to defray their nursing home expenses. Of course, for a decent existence beyond mere survival, we all rely on a few little things that are basic to our humanity. So Medicare authorizes each state to set a monthly, quote, personal needs allowance, so their elderly patients can cover their hygiene and grooming products, a book or CD, a small gift for grandchildren, a chocolate bar, etc. Good. But then Mr. Minji walked in. In 1987, Congress set the minimum for this allowance at a meager $30 a month, under $8 a week. Congress has not raised it in the 36 years since, and most states still provide only a pittance, despite inflation and monopoly price gouging on practically everything. So our state and national leaders, who freely dole out massive corporate subsidies and tax giveaways to billionaires, are leaving ill seniors with so little spending money that they must ration their toothpaste and scrimp pennies to buy a rare treat from the vending machine. This is Jim Hightower saying, I know this is small in the global scale of human indignities, but that makes it an even bigger moral failure for our society. It would take so little to do so much for so many.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So evidently, there was a bomb threat called in to a New York courthouse. And my mind went immediately when I saw this. John Barron did it. Go on. Could you see it? Can you see, you know, Trump acting again like his other ego, his press secretary or whoever John Barron was? Can you imagine that? Can you see it?
I see, I can, because this is great for him. All of this attention, feeding the ego. Like I said yesterday, masterful stroke coming out and saying he's going to be indicted, putting a timetable to it, putting all the pressure back on this DA. Wow. Look, don't like him, but you gotta recognize the brilliance, at least my thoughts. And that's why I've asked my good friend Joe Walsh to come share some thoughts with us, former Illinois congressman, former 2020 Republican candidate for president, also host of the fabulous podcast White Flag with Joe Walsh. Joe, buddy, how are you?
Rick, I missed you. Good to be with you.
So what do you make of this? My take is a stroke of genius. The one thing that Trump does better than anybody is get attention. He's the hey, look at me guy. I mean, you don't get to be a top reality TV star without being the guy who wants to wear the lampshade. But I wanted to get your thoughts.
This is the beginning. I mean, these next 2 years are going to be filled with probably 2 to 3 Trump indictments, maybe more. Republicans on a daily basis having to defend criminal behavior. And I don't know, Rick, I don't know what Democrats will necessarily do these next 2 years. I really don't. It's going to be all about Trump.
It's all about Trump. And the reality is, I think Biden is doing a great job, and we can argue whether you think so or not. I think, you know, transformationally moving us away from neoliberalism and bringing back manufacturing, talking about a tax code that's going to be beneficial. I mean, there are lots of things that I'm in favor of that getting no press whatsoever because the circus is in town.
And you and I may disagree on plenty of that policy, but I agree with your overall point, Rick. Joe Biden's focused on his job, on what he needs to do. I will say this. Joe Biden also focused on continuing to lead a worldwide coalition to defend Ukraine against the country that invaded Ukraine. So Biden's focused on his job. He's probably going to run again, no doubt. This is going to be a Republican circus. It'll be a Republican circus in the House. You and I knew that once McCarthy became Speaker. Republicans investigating every Democrat alive. But now Trump will take over because he's running for president again and he's going to be indicted.
Do you think he's going to be indicted by the New York DA? Or do you think, as some are saying, maybe the heat has gotten a little too much and he's going to wait for somebody else? Because it seems to me everybody keeps waiting. You know, and this is where, again, you know, I love my left friends who keep saying, you know, all during Trump's presidency, he's going to resign any day now. And I was saying, he's never resigning. Mueller's coming. Mueller was nowhere near. There's all these buildups. It's going to happen. It's going to happen this time. Trust us this. And it doesn't happen. Is it going to happen?
No, that's actually really a great point, Rick, because I've always felt the Republicans are the same way. Privately, the last 7 years, Republicans privately have never wanted Donald Trump to be there. They've never wanted Trump to exist. And they've always wanted somebody else to take him out. Mueller, the Justice Department, impeachment, somebody or something else. Look, I don't know the first thing about what's going to happen in New York. I'm keeping my eyes on what I think matters. Donald Trump pressured the head of the elections in Georgia to overthrow the election results in Georgia. Donald Trump incited an insurrection to overthrow an American election. If he's not indicted for those two things, then we're in a heap of trouble.
No, I absolutely agree. I mean, you know, I had someone say today, well, you know, it's still a crime. And I go, yeah, it's a crime, but there are much bigger crimes. And I go back to the Clinton years. I wasn't in favor of Clinton even being asked that question while in the White House. And sex is one thing outside, you know, keep that outside. This is kind of the same thing. And I think average people are going, meh. But what you laid out, you know, the fact that he was trying to influence the vote multiple times, we're finding out. And also, you know, January 6th, you can't get away from. Someone's got to be held accountable. I think that's much bigger.
That goes to the heart of a democracy, right? Never before in American history has a sitting American president lost an election, refused to participate in the peaceful transfer of power, and then did everything he could to lead a violent attempt to overthrow that election. again, if that's not criminal, nothing is. But don't forget about this, Rick. We learned today, I think even earlier this evening, that when it comes to this whole other investigation, the classified documents down at Mar-a-Lago, the Justice Department believes they've proven that Donald Trump misled his own lawyers when it came to those classified documents. I think he'll be indicted for that as well.
So I could, but now I've got friends who are saying, no, that's not going to happen because, you know, Biden had them, Pence had them, everybody's got them. They were everywhere. But you hit it on the head. The difference was, is Biden said, here, evidently we had these. Yeah. Pence went and looked through his files going, oh, us too. The difference was that covering up, that difference was not relinquishing them. And I think that I think you're right. For me, that's the big one as well.
I think, Rick, those are three big ones. I acknowledge that there will be Americans who will not understand the distinctions that you just laid out. And they'll say Biden, Pence, Trump, Hillary, they all do it. They all keep their documents. No, every case should stand on its own. They're all being investigated. Clearly, Trump purposely took these docs and tried to hide them and obstructed the investigation into where these documents were. Look, again, we're looking at about this next year. I mean, imagine, Rick, you and I speaking in June or July. I think we're looking at a guy who, by then, Donald Trump, will have been indicted two or three more times.
See, I'm of two
different... And he'll still be the Republican Party nominee.
Well, and that's what I want. Look, I want him to be the nominee because I think the only way we as a country can come back together and fight over issues is if he loses at the ballot box. If he goes down because he was indicted, now he's in jail and he doesn't run or however that goes, if there's an excuse, the base, the extremists, they just go, look, well, we were cheated, and I think things get much worse instead of better. I'm curious what your thought is.
I agree with your premise. I also say this, my good dear friend from Pennsylvania. An indicted Donald Trump will be the Republican Party nominee. Look, and here's the other thing, Rick. I know the Republican Party. It's my former party. I talk to the base every day. The only one right now who has a shot to beat Trump is DeSantis. And the more and more people get to see and hear from him, man, he's got the charisma of your left shoe. Are you wearing shoes right now?
Yes.
Are you wearing shoes? Okay. I don't know what your left shoe looks like, Rick. DeSantis has the charisma of your left shoe. So there's nobody to beat Trump, and the base wants a Trump son of a bitch.
No, and this is where we are, sadly, because I was going to ask you about what your thoughts on DeSantis's his comments to Piers Morgan were about the fact that he got too popular, and that's why Trump turned on him. But clearly you don't think that much of DeSantis.
I know him. I know him pretty well. Again, he's got zero charisma. He's kind of weird with people. It'll be interesting, Rick. He doesn't know how to do retail politics. He's got a glass jaw. He's thin-skinned. He's not fast on his feet. I don't think he'll wear real well when it comes to people in Iowa, New Hampshire meeting the dude. The one thing, and you said it at the top, about Donald Trump is he is who he is, and he's got charisma. I mean, he is all BS. There's nothing. He's a total phony, but he's a real phony. I mean, he is who he is. And DeSantis doesn't have any of that.
And nothing's ever his fault. Like, for instance, evidently they were doing some prayer thing on this Christian, pro-Trump Christian group. And evidently they had some difficulties. And the first thing he said is, my phone was hacked by the radical left. And I'm going, you can't just say technology screwed you over, that, you know, maybe the Wi-Fi needs to be updated and maybe we should be investing. Oh, wait a minute. Joe Biden is investing in broadband access. But, you know, he couldn't go there. It had to be the radical left, had to feed the base the red meat.
And Rick, he's not a very nice guy. You know, Trump's kind of a jackass and a jerk, but Trump does it with a twinkle. I mean, he's like a performer. DeSantis just comes across as kind of mean.
Yeah.
And again, I don't think most Americans are going to like that. The base wants a jerk. The base wants a bully. Look, they're my people. The Republican Party base wants a bully. Both Trump and DeSantis are bullies.
Look, I'll be honest with you. I want somebody who's going to fight for me. I've been saying about the Democratic Party for years. In a street fight, they'll maybe be willing to hold your coat.
Not Rick. But again, you get it. Not a bully. I want a fighter.
Yep.
I want a Democrat who will go toe-to-toe in a ring with either one of these guys. But I don't want a bully, somebody who picks on people below him. I don't want you, and I don't want that.
I want somebody punching up, not down. You're absolutely right on this. But again, you know, this view that he speaks to them, and I've said this about my family in the past. They are the basket of deplorables. They were all racist, homophobic, misogynistic, all of those things. Nobody got them to the polls but Trump. And it's not because of the homophobia or the racism or any of that. It's because he sold them on the idea that he was going to bring jobs back. He was going to bring those union jobs on Brook Park Avenue in Cleveland back and going to give them the lifestyle that they lost because of all of the deindustrialization, all of the horrible trade policies, all of the stuff that destroyed who and what they were about. He sold them on the idea, like a good con man, that he was bringing it all back. Now, he didn't, but they bought it. And now it's gone even further.
No, Rick, you're spot on. He said, I'll bring that coal plant back. He said that. But the other part of that was he told them, I'll build a wall around America and I'll keep all the foreign competition out.
Yeah.
And it'll all be just America. America. Everything will be here. And that world's gone, period. And that world should never come back.
And this is where I go, and this is where I think you and I sitting down and having, you know, conversations about policy, I look forward to.
Hey, Rick, what word did you just use?
Policy?
Policy. What the hell is that? Oh, my God. Policy.
Exactly.
That's so cool.
No, because here's the thing, and here's the reality. The reality is Washington doesn't work for average everyday people. We're polarized, and I just went through this. We're polarized in the way that nothing gets done. I looked at the Biden budget. I looked at the Republican Study Committee's budget. No way either one of those are coming anywhere near reality, and that's not good for working people. It's good for corporate America. It's good for bankers. It's good for Wall Street, but it's not good for working people on both sides of the equation.
Agreed, and you and I would disagree. Look, yes, Washington does not work for regular people. I've said this a bunch, Rick, and I think you agree. We are living in a major league populist moment. Trump recognized it. Republicans recognize the populist moment. What are they doing? They're demagoguing it and scaring people and lying to people about it, like I'll bring that plant back to town. But the Democrats, Rick, don't even recognize this populist moment we're in. What the hell? That's where we're. I know. I'm singing your music.
Hello.
I know.
You're listening to the Rick Smith Show here with Joe Walsh, former Illinois congressman, 2020 Republican presidential candidate, host of the fabulous podcast White Flag with Joe Walsh. You can find that wherever you find your podcasts. We'll get links out on social media how you can get that. I got to get your thoughts because you, longtime radio host, I know you are. This Pete Santilli guy. Came out and said that he's ready for executing Obama, Eric Holder, Susan Rice, if he is indicted. Now, you know, the right wing audience, we hear stories of police. They're ready mobilizing to protect cities. Do you really see this kind of, the militia teams going out with their guns, marching down the streets? Do you see this kind of violence in the event that Trump gets indicted?
First off, that guy should be fired. Like, he should have been fired, you know, a minute after he said what he said. Yes, I do see and worry about violence. I do not see and worry, Rick, about a big event like a January 6th. I worry about more targeted, micro-violent events, stealth-violent events throughout the country. Remember, we're only at the beginning. Trump may be indicted tomorrow. On this New York thing. But I think we're in for a long summer of bigger and more important indictments, and this thing's going to build. And I know the base, I know these people, and there are some wackadoodles in this base. And yeah, there will be more targeted incidents of violence throughout the country.
Any hope of this getting walked back? I mean, because it looks like we're heading towards major conflict. I hear people talking all the time, we're heading towards a civil war. I even know people who are eagerly anticipating this. Is there any walking this back at any point? And does a Trump defeat in 2024 help or make things worse?
Help. Trump losing in 24 would help. Can we walk it back? Look, Rick, I was in Congress 8-9 years ago, and I was talking about a divided country. Maybe America needs a divorce. We need marriage therapy, all the rest. I think we are really divided, super divided. Trump didn't cause the divide. Yeah. He's an ugly product of the divide. And it's much bigger than Donald Trump. The problem, and you know it, Rick, and by the way, you do a great job of talking to anybody. We are so freaking soloed. We're not talking to each other. Yeah, I get it. MAGA is off the rails and crazy, but the left lives in their own world too. And right now we're like pointing guns at each other. Nobody's talking across these divides.
No, it's important. I mean, if we're gonna say, because you brought up the national divorce, and I got to tell you, I think it's a horrible conversation even to begin having, because it's moving us down that road. It's just a nicer way of saying civil war, in my view.
I agree. I completely agree. But what is it, Rick? And I know you have the most wonderful marriage in the world. I'm on my second marriage and I love my wife. But when a couple's in trouble, what do? Typically, right at the end, at the last resort, they go to therapy. This country needs to talk with each other and listen to each other. We're at that point, and it may be past the point. I don't know if this great experiment can stay together. You don't know that either, but I think we're in for a really bumpy, ugly 10 to 20 years.
Wow. Well, we will see. I had so much more I wanted to get you to, but I got to take a break. Joe, as always, I appreciate the time. Great stuff, my friend. I look forward to coming back again, and I hope in July you'll hook up with us in Chicago at Netroots Nation.
Yes. Love you, Rick Smith. Love you.
Thanks so much, our good friend Joe Walsh. Make sure you check out his podcast, the White Flag with Joe Walsh podcast. We'll get links out on social media how you can take a look at that. Going to take a quick break right back after this. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
The phone lines are open. Give Rick a call at 1-866-416-RICK. That's 1-866-416-7425.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 1960. That was the day of the Sharpeville Massacre in South Africa. Black South Africans were required to carry identification documents. These passes limited who could live or work in designated white areas of the country. This restricted black workers from finding employment, especially in urban areas, if they did not have the required pass. Police would patrol the restricted areas looking for and arresting those without documentation. Black residents organized against this restrictive apartheid regime. At the township of Verning, a large crowd gathered, numbering in the thousands. Petrus Tom, a factory worker who had become an organizer for the Metal and Allied Workers Union, described the plans that led up to the demonstration. Inside his factories, workers would wear away with the passes stickers. They organized at bus stops, urging workers getting off the buses to burn their passes in defiance of the restrictive law. Petrus said it was the strongest campaign I'd ever seen. The organizers called for a demonstration outside the local police station. The plan was to turn themselves in for arrest for refusing to carry the pass. The police fired into the crowd of unarmed protesters, killing 69 people. 200 more were injured. Most of those shot by police were shot in the back as they were trying to flee the gunfire. Thousands of black South Africans were arrested in the days following the protest. Sharpeville became a watershed moment in the anti-apartheid struggle. In 1996, Nelson Mandela chose Sharpeville as the site to sign the country's new constitution. Today is now honored as Human Rights Day in South Africa. Labor History in 2 brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
So, you know, I look at this, and again, you know, the reason I like someone like Joe Walsh is, you know, he, again, you know, 2010, 2011, 2012, the time when he was in Congress. And I've told him this, you know, to his face the number of times. You know, I was beating up on him at every opportunity because, I, you know, again, he was on the wrong side of every issue. We would not agree on anything during that time period. Right now, the thing that holds us together, that brings us together, is this idea that defending democracy, defending this incredible experiment. Policy is something that we're not really even talking about. This idea of how to make people's lives better. And Joe and I have had these conversations off air in the past, you know, about, you know, our different philosophies on how to get to the same place. And again, my basic belief structure is that we all want the same kind of things. We all want good schools for our kids, safe neighborhoods for our kids to grow up in, good jobs with good wages, job security, health care, all of those things. It's just a matter of what path we take to get there. Do we take the right path or the left path? Do we, you know, we go along the red line or the blue line? That's not where we are as a country right now. And, you know, and I think Joe was very clear on that. You know, we're not sure that we're going to be able to hand this wonderful experiment off to our children and grandchildren. Don't know where this is going to take us, because we've got people running for elected office who I don't believe share those values. When someone like Trump is out there saying it's all about him, everything is about him. It's not about the country. It's not walk with me, if you will. I'm looking at this one little tiny thing. This, you know, Christians for Trump group holds a prayer call, which, you know, evidently is now the big thing. And somehow the connection gets screwed up. Who does he blame? Those evil libs. It's the libs who did this. The left has attacked me. You know, go get them. Instead of saying, oh, it's just technology. You know, it couldn't be his fault. Couldn't be that he dialed the wrong number. Couldn't be that he had it on airplane mode. You know, who knows? Who knows what really happened? But immediately, it's never him. It's always them. Go get them. It's always division. You know, even when he was in the White House, look, you look at his tax bill. What did he do in his tax bill? He punished blue states. Specifically, the SALT legislation in the tax bill, the state and local tax stuff, that who did he go after? He went after blue states, went after New York, California, New Jersey. Said you can't deduct more than $10,000 in property taxes. And who does that hurt? It hurts working people in those states. But, you know, the rest of the country doesn't get that. They targeted that specifically to punish. And I look at Biden. Biden hasn't done any of that. Now, again, as I've said before, much better guy than I am. Because, you know, my inclination is, well, you did it to me, I'm going to do it back. Then, you know, and this is why I'm not in politics. But, you know, we're in this moment where we can't talk to each other. And look, I've had people that I've talked to for years. You know, we don't talk anymore. Because it's not about policy anymore. It's about, you know, just basic core stuff that used to be in agreement in the past. I listened to a friend going off. Let me say acquaintance. Friend is a bit strong. An acquaintance going off about how Biden is evil, how he's a pedophile, there's the most vile stuff that they believe. And I called him on it. He said, well, you believe the same things about Trump. And I go, no, I really don't. I don't put him in that. I think he's wrong. I think he's an authoritarian type that I don't want leading a country. I think he's somebody who wants to consolidate power. But do I think he's satanic? do I think he's a child molester? I'm not saying that. Is it possible? Who knows? I don't know him that well. He did own the Miss Teen USA pageant. There are some interesting comments he's made. But I'm not running around saying that he's this or that. I'm saying his policies are bad. I'm saying what he's going to do to our institutions is bad. What he's doing to our elections is bad. I don't think he should be indicted because of, you know, Kevin McCarthy framed it as, well, we don't go after our political opponents like this. You go after criminals like this. You go after people who broke the law like this. So it's not about politics. It's not about the red hat or the blue hat. It's about the fact that he broke the law, and this for...
You're listening to the Talk of Green Bay. WGBW 1590 AM Denmark. W250 CV Green Bay. And always streaming on the Civic Media app.